Rev up your engines for the Mid-Michigan Biker Podcast with Big E. Proudly sponsored by Christensen Law, where bikers helping injured bikers is more than just a motto. It's our commitment to the biker community. Be sure to tune in and listen to the latest news and biker buzz. And for all your personal injury needs, be sure to contact the Christensen Law team at 248-900-9000. Welcome to the Mid-Michigan Biker Podcast, where the rubber meets the road and the tales of the ride unfold. I'm Big E, your guide on this two-wheeled adventure. Life is short, bikers, so let's get after it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Today, I have a very interesting guest. Some of my listeners have expressed that they really like to hear these kinds of stories. So I'm very happy and honored to welcome Jarrett Sherman to the show. Did I say that right?
Yeah. That's me.
All right. Awesome. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Big E. Happy to be here.
So we kind of met through Facebook. I was looking for audience member or guests, and you happened to spark a little interest. So you have a pretty interesting story. So let's go to that. Tell us a little bit about what you did to attract my attention to your story. What is it that you did?
This is back in 98. I took a one-year trip around the world, and part of that was just all one-way tickets. Didn't know where I was going. Wound up in Asia, and then out of Asia, after 6 months there, I went to London, bought a motorcycle, bought a Yamaha SRX 600, and set off into Europe, again, not knowing where I was going or for how long, and wound up being a three-month trip around Europe, and it was amazing. Beyond
amazing. Yeah, it would be pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool that you just like, I'm going to go here. I'm going to do this. And I don't really have a plan. I'm just going to do it.
That was the way to do it. Same thing in Asia. It's just, you woke up every day and you're like, and I was alone for most of this. I had buddies join me for pieces of it. But it was kind of, I've never had that kind of freedom. It's like, what do I want to do? Where do I want to go? What do I want to see? What country do I want to be in next? It was pretty cool.
So
I wound up putting together the route that I wound up putting together was, it just hit every place I wanted to see. And it was amazing.
So what was going on in 1998 where you just decided that, did you like graduate from school? Or, because I know me and my buddy, we had talked about when we graduated, we were going to go on a backpacking trip across Italy. He actually is from Italian descent and has ancestors over there and family over there. That was our plan. So what kind of spurred yours?
Something similar. I had a buddy since junior high school, and we always talked about going to Nepal and going trekking in Nepal, like being in the Himalayas, and loved Everest and all the lore of Everest and everything. So after university, I was like working in the film business, and production is not a great job. I mean, it's very difficult. And I was kind of done with it. And he's like, hey, he was finishing his master's in, I don't remember what it was, but he's like, hey, what are you doing next year? And I was like, well, you know, more of this, I guess. And he's like, do you want to go finally do Nepal? So we put together this trip, and I had a window washing business that I ran with my company. So I just knew that what was coming, and I went into overdrive and just worked really, really hard that season and made enough money for this trip. And he was taking forever to go. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go. I'll meet you in Kathmandu. And this was 98. There was no cell phones. You know, I got my first Hotmail account. So we knew we could stay in touch, but it was internet cafes and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And just the short version. I flew to Whistler, stayed with some friends who were working there and skied for a couple of weeks, and then went to Thailand and just sort of tripped around Thailand for a few months, and then wound up. Then he told me he was coming. So I went to Kathmandu, and he still took a month to get there. So I wound up having quite an interesting time in Kathmandu with Sicilian mobsters and it was a pretty interesting time. And he finally showed up. And so then we went for our 30-day trek to Everest Base Camp, and then to back to Thailand. And then he left for London. I still stayed in Asia for a little while. And then I went to go meet him in London. He had an apartment there. And that's where I was like, well, I'm going to buy a bike and go to Europe. And so staying with him, I bought this bike. I had a little red skull face thing that I bought in Nepal. So I glued it next to the speedometer, and I called the skull Fast Eddie. And that was the bike was Fast Eddie.
Nice.
And I bought all the gear in London. I bought a terrible leather jacket that I wound up selling in London and buying a much better leather jacket that I still have. It's my riding jacket still. And I bought these, nylon saddlebags that you sling over the back seat. And, you know, bungeed a bunch of stuff down. And I'd never ridden a bike longer than a day, really. I rented a bike in Vegas once and rode out to the Red Rock Canyon.
Oh, yeah.
And that was my long. So I was, like, pretty nervous setting out. I didn't know what I was doing. And I was also in England, so I was on the wrong side of the road. And
so they don't require you to have a cycle endorsement or anything over there? Or?
I guess I had my motorcycle license here from Canada, and I think I got you can at that time you could go to the auto club and get like an international permit.
Oh wow!
But I had that with me, so I was able to buy a bike in London and get insurance out of London actually, and then I sort of set off, and I was just really nervous, and my first day was like pretty intense. I left London. Got to the ferry, got across the ferry, got to France, started driving. I was heading to Amsterdam, as you did in 98.
Right.
And the last 100 kilometers, so I was pretty wiped out from the full day in the saddle, just being nervous about the whole, right. Are my saddlebags even still back there? Are they going to stay on? Every bump I went over, I was like, oh my God, the saddlebags, I just didn't know. And then it rained the last 100 kilometers from Rotterdam to Amsterdam. By the time I got to Amsterdam, I was so fried. I navigated my way right into the city in foreign language, road signs and all that, and pulled up to where I thought I was supposed to be, popped the clutch, stalled the bike, and fell over just as a moped pizza delivery guy pulled up beside me, and I knocked us both over, and I just felt like such an idiot, and apologized to him, and I was just sizzled by that point, and everything was soaked, and I'd never ridden in the rain, all of it. So I just short circuited.
And that was just day one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's, you should write a book, dude.
Oh man. Yeah. I was solo for most of it. So I actually have most of this sort of journaled and
down. Very cool.
I could write a crazy book.
You could. People would probably buy it. I'm reading some crazy motorcycle books. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just what went down in Amsterdam alone is its own book, I think.
Yeah. Well, you can have multiple volumes.
But I went. I wound up. So I had kitted myself out with everything in London except boots. I couldn't find riding boots that I thought I liked. So I had hiking boots. So I was like, okay, I'll wear hiking boots with my leather pants and my leather jacket and the whole
right.
thing. Obviously not a match, but after 100 kilometers of rain, I was like, well, this won't work. My feet are soaked. So I went to the market there, and there was an open air market, farmer's market in Amsterdam. And I bought these old German army boots that are still my riding boots.
Oh yeah. Wow. Later.
Yeah. And they're very cheap.
Very cool. I think that's pretty awesome. Yeah. You still have some of the same gear you were sporting back in 98.
Yeah, it fits. Yeah. The best leather jacket I've ever seen anywhere. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So what were some of your most memorable destinations you visited during your 3-month journey through Europe?
I'll start by saying all of Europe.
All of Europe.
I don't know if you've ever ridden in Europe, but the way that they treat it's the opposite of writing in North America. Because in North America, it seems like no one's paying attention or they're actually trying to kill you.
Right.
And in Europe, you're allowed to filter. So there's never traffic. You're never sitting in traffic because you can always go up to the front. And the drivers are all aware. They just are. It's just a different mentality there. So, like, they'll often pull to make room for you as you're filtering up. Like, they're just aware of what's going on around them, the way the drivers here aren't. So you can really, like, when you never, ever, ever have to sit in traffic, and there's, you know, you can always get to the front of the line, and you're just, it's such an efficient way to travel. It's sort of what owning a motorcycle in urban areas is supposed to be, which is, like, better for parking, better for traveling, no traffic, quicker to get there, and safe. And so all of Europe is unlike, if anybody out there who's listening, who's a rider, who wants a different experience, at least it was 30 years ago. And I've read that it still sort of is, but it's worth it. It's an experience unlike anything else.
Wow.
So all of Europe that way. There was a one-day trip I took from Chamonix, which I think is like the France-Switzerland border. I rode all the way to San Sebastian, which is about 1,000 kilometers, 10-hour day by car.
Wow.
To go meet these two sisters who I had met in Amsterdam. So it was worth it.
Yeah.
But it was one long day, you know, through the mountains, almost there was one twisty turn with a tight bridge over a canyon, and I wound up, you know, I took the turn wrong and I wound up on the wrong side of the road facing traffic, and a car had come, so I was like,
oh boy.
Squished myself up against the side of the bridge. Like, there was some moments. That was a great day. I wound up doing Barcelona to Rome along the whole Mediterranean coast, which was unbelievable. It was like being in Chips. Remember that show, Chips?
Yep.
It was like being in the beginning of Chips. It was just incredible. And along the Riviera, there was these windy flats where it was like, they were flat, but it was twisty. So you're just throwing the bike from side to side to side, navigating these twists and turns. That was unbelievable. There's this place called Cinque Terre in Italy, just between Genoa and Rome, which is like these five little villages perched on the cliffs of the Mediterranean. And you can actually like stay in one and then hike. It's a one-day hike. You can hike to all five along this like footpath. And it's just, you know, like living in a postcard. It was amazing. And then the road out of there was like this windy two-lane clinging to the cliffs high up above all the towns, overlooking the Mediterranean with like long grasses and, you know, just again, out of a movie.
Wow.
So that was pretty incredible. And then by the time I got to Rome, I'd been riding for, you know, probably a couple of months at this point. I was really comfortable I was at one with my bike, and I was very just, you know, comfortable and confident. And I don't know if you've ever been to Rome, but it's all like, you know, it's all cars and traffic, but there's this whole contingent of people on these Vespas and scooters. And so you get to, and again, with the filtering, you get to the traffic light, and there's probably like, you know, whatever traffic is behind you, there's probably 100 little mopeds and scooters, and everything's like buzzing like a mosquito, the swarm of mosquitoes all buzzing, and the light turns green and they all just take off, you know, like just like lightning.
Right.
So after sort of realizing what was happening, I started to ride like them and try to keep up with them. And I was the only one on a bike. Everyone else was on these little, you know, scooters. So I had 600cc compared to whatever they were riding. So I could always blast away from them. But like, yeah, light would turn green. We'd be up on the sidewalk getting around people. And like, it was total craziness. I would never do that again. But I was, what do they say? When in Rome?
Yeah.
I was literally doing what was happening in Rome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was, yeah, that was some great moments. And then at one point I rode from Rome up to Prague through the, you know, Eastern European countryside. And it was just, when did I ever think I would be anywhere near any of that stuff? So it was just pretty crazy. It was very cool.
Sounds like it's some pretty incredible riding over there.
Like every kind of landform, you know, twisty, high, tight mountain roads or big, you know, above alpine roads in big open bowls, and then like coastlines and lakes. And you see those like aqueduct looking sort of like highway passes that are over these valleys.
Yep.
They're way, way elevated. riding on one of those through the mountains, like it's just every, you turn around every corner, it's like, you can't believe it.
Wow. So do you think traveling by motorcycle enhanced your experience compared to other modes of transportation?
Yeah. I mean, it's all the things about motorcycling that we all love. You know, you're more in it. It's not like you're looking through a window as you travel through it. You're really in it. So the smells and the, you know, the changes in temperature, and it's just more immersive. And you put your feet down and you're there, you know, you lean off your bike and you're suddenly standing in these mountains, as opposed to in a car, you're like in a cage looking out, you know?
Right.
So it definitely enhanced. This trip was all about really being in those places.
Yeah. I think on a motorcycle, you're definitely, you're more of your senses are at work. So you're able to experience it more intensely than if you're just in the car. You know, you're actually breathing the air where you're at, not the air that was in your car when you started your trip 100 miles ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And I felt a little bit like I was solo. So I felt a little bit like I missed out on, you know, the people that I'd stay with at hostels, they'd get on the train together and hang out. And, you know, I missed some of that.
Right.
But so it made my journey a little more solo than sort of traveling with people. But I met people and, you know, we went town to town together. They took the train, I took the bike. Occasionally I would take somebody with me, but not too often. I had an extra helmet with me. And I would definitely do it again over train travel for sure.
Cool.
Car travel.
So were there any unexpected challenges or obstacles you faced during your trip?
Well, it turns out, and I didn't know it, but this SRX 600 has a notorious kickstart and no electric start. So, you know, I'd load up my bike and strap everything down every morning and bungee it all up. And I'd be in my leathers and, you know, jacket and pants and the whole thing, helmet on. And I would have to spend like 15 minutes, all my weight on one leg, just cranking it again and again and again. Because whenever it was cold, it just took forever to catch. And then I'd be sweating and like feeling like I was going to throw up and just working it so hard just to get it to catch that I learned to keep it warm. You know, if I ever had to stop, it had to be a short stop so I could get back on and kick it over while it was still warm. So that was a challenge that I faced, but I never really overcame it. It was just something I learned to tolerate.
Right.
Because it was I definitely learned like never doing that. Yeah, kickstart's great, but I'll take an electric start.
Next bike got to have electric start. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. My next bikes did for sure. No more kickstart. And the other thing was that I didn't realize was, again, this is like the first bike I ever owned. I didn't know anything about anything. Didn't have a windshield.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a cafe racer style bike. And I didn't know anything about aftermarket windshields, you know, like I didn't know. So I spent 3 months like wrenching my neck on these highways. There was a lot of highway riding. As much as I tried to take small roads, there was long stretches of highway riding. And that was real.
Wind fatigue was real.
Yeah, it's really a thing.
It is.
And I definitely learned to hunker down and get into the zone and you know, really sort of like hug the tank and just get low. And it was cool because I could sort of like get into a bit of a trance state that way. A little bit and just sort of zone in on the road. And
put some miles down. And
as a way to get out of the wind. Yeah, I did that a lot. And that was me and Fast Eddie, you know.
Right.
It was right by my eyes at that point. Yeah, so I didn't overcome that one either. As soon as I got home and be like, why didn't you stop somewhere and get a windshield put on? I was like, you can do that? I had no idea. So, yeah, that was, I guess it was bike challenges.
Bike challenges more than actual cultural kind of things.
Like there was no, Europe is so westernized that it's like, you know, there's times when maybe we didn't speak the same language, but I remember it. I was staying in this seaside town, Frigene, which is it's like Rome by the sea, like where these people I knew who I was staying with lived. And I asked some policeman for directions into Rome. It was all back roads. And he was giving me the directions in Italian. And I was like, I think I know what you're saying. I don't have. And then I would sort of say thank you and went on my way. And I wound up making every turn correctly and wound up exactly where I was supposed to be. So, you know, even that wasn't such an obstacle.
Well, that's cool.
Even though it was, you know, it was pretty funny.
So, all right. What about a standout cultural or culinary experience you had while on your trip?
Yeah, I wound up being in Barcelona for something called La Merced, which is this crazy citywide street festival. I guess it's a few days long. But it's the one where they, I'm sure you've seen pictures of it, like the tons of people in the old city. And they do these things called castells where like rings of, I guess it's mostly men, stand with their hands on each other's shoulder. And then another ring stands on their shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I've seen that.
Another one. Yeah. So they were doing that all over the place. It was like, it was crazy to watch them do it and crazy to watch them be up there and then how they came down. And there's street performers and parades and processions and, you know, marching bands and parties and fireworks and these giant puppet characters that they would parade through the streets. And it was like a celebration of Catalan culture. And, but they had Lou Reed did a concert that I sort of wandered onto in the square. The whole city was alive and it was partying and it was just sort of a wild, incredible time to be there. That was pretty cool.
Sweet. And you didn't plan on being there during that. It just happened. Just happened that you were there.
I walked out of my hostel one day and this was happening. You know, I was like, what, you know, what's going on? And fireworks on the beach. And yeah, it was
good time.
It's pretty, Barcelona is a pretty amazing place, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe my favorite city in all of Europe is Barcelona.
Have you been back to Europe since your trip or?
Yeah, I wound up going back a bunch of times for work. I wound up shooting a pilot for a series in Barcelona. I mean, that trip I wound up having a culinary experience because I was there with a director, cinematographer, who's like a real foodie.
Uh-huh.
And he took us to this place in Barcelona, which is the place that all the chefs, Barcelona is a real food chef kind of city. And so he took us to the restaurant where the chefs go when they're done work. And it was specialized in like things like brains, you know? So we had like brain fritters and, you know, body parts and, and organs. But it all tasted incredible. And
we shy away from that stuff here in the States, but it's not so much shied away from over there.
Not at all. Yeah, no, I'd never had anything like that before.
Right.
Since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of that stuff out there. We missed the running of the bulls. I didn't get to see that.
Yeah.
That was sort of around that time when I was in Spain, but wasn't happening then. I wound up going to a museum, the Salvador Dali Museum, that was designed by Salvador Dali.
Yeah. So,
which is a pretty incredible place, you know, in terms of culture and art and that kind of thing. It was pretty, yeah, it was pretty amazing to see just because it was, he put it together to showcase his art.
Right.
Yep. And I did that. You know what? Barcelona, San Sebastian, like Spain is really, I think it's where it's at. Like San Sebastian is, I don't know if you know this town, it's like a surfing town, but it's like an old classic style. It's almost like an elegant Coney Island, but like European style, like this big crescent beach with all this, these hotels and like these old style buildings all around it. Just really elegant and gorgeous. And the food's unbelievable.
Yeah. I'd be all about the food.
Yeah. And you've got coastline, like right there, you've got coastline. You've got, I can't remember what the mountains are called, northern Spain, but they've got some big mountains there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of got everything. And then south of that, they've got like desert. They kind of got every landform to ride through and plus everything else. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I would have liked to have gone to Spain. We, when I was in high school back in the day, they actually used to do trips to Spain for third year Spanish would go to Spain.
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
Well, figures the year I'm going to be my third year in Spanish, there's not enough interest, so no third year Spanish class. So I'm pretty bummed about that. I enjoyed that class, but yeah, I was bummed. My buddy, the one I was going to go into Italy with, he was in that class the year before, and of course they went.
That's the worst.
So yeah, that kind of sucked, but oh well.
You never go. I encourage you, if you get the chance, it's me. I think right now, actually, the dollar there is cheaper than the U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
The euro is worth less, I think, than the U.S.
dollar. I don't know.
So it's not as expensive to go to as it used to be.
Right.
I don't know, but it's pretty amazing.
So looking back, what advice would you give someone planning a similar motorcycle adventure through Europe today, considering the changes in technology, infrastructure, and travel trends?
Yeah.
You already said Spain is the place to be, so.
I think so. I think.
I would love to go see Spain.
I mean, and by bike, it's just like, I just think it's just an incredible place. It's got everything, really everything. It's like medieval walled cities and crazy beaches, and it's got Ibiza, which is the craziest of crazy beaches.
Yeah.
Lots of naked European women running around on those beaches.
Gotta love that.
Yeah, it's not, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I'd say do it with someone cool. I did it solo. I didn't mind being alone, but much better to share an experience like that with somebody that you like and that's, you know, easy to travel with. I think that things are closer together there than they would be in North America. So you can cover a lot of ground. So like make a list of every place you want to hit and just go hit it. Like I could tell you my route, and that it just happened to be, I had a lot of time and I could just sort of wander where I was interested in and take my time getting there. But yeah, you can actually, things are closer together. So you can get from here to there without it taking tons and tons of time. And I think if you really need to, you can put your bike on a train. Like there's all that stuff now.
Right.
I found the places in the countryside are usually more interesting and easier to deal with than the big cities. Big cities have their, their charm, but they're big cities. So it depends what you're going for, I guess.
Right.
My navigation was a map on a tank bag. And I still managed to find my way wherever I was going, despite the language. I imagine these days with with GPS pointing you every step of the way, it would, that's just gone. No problem, right. I would think. So I think it's way easier. I think that there's probably a lot more places to rent bikes than there used to be. But buying a bike worked out for me because when I sold it, I pretty much broke even. So it cost me nothing to do.
Cool.
Okay, I guess except the insurance.
Right.
I wound up, so my route, I'm going to tell you my route.
Sure.
It was London to Amsterdam, from Amsterdam south through Germany to Switzerland, all through Switzerland, to Chamonix to San Sebastian, that one epic day, San Sebastian to Barcelona, to Figueres, where the Salvador Dali Museum was, and then basically the Mediterranean coast, so Marseille, Nice, Genoa, Cinque Terre, Fregene, which is Rome by the Sea, where, as it happened, my sister was friends with this Italian stewardess who lived in a house with three other Italian stewardesses, and I became friends with her. So when she said, when you come to Fregene, stay with us. So I stayed there too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I left my bike with them in Fregene, and I went to Egypt for a month. Still as part of this larger trip.
Right.
So I did Egypt for a month, back to backpacking, and then came back to Rome. In the end, what happened was I left my bike in Rome. I went to Florence. I went to London. I went home. And that was 11 months on the road. And then the following summer, I went back to Rome, got my bike, drove up through Salzburg, Vienna, into Prague, hung out with a friend from Toronto who was there. And then I rode Frankfurt, Calais, London, sold the bike, and came home. And that wound up being 12 months.
Total. Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool adventure.
So it was an adventure. I'd say, if you can buy a bike, it might make sense. But I'd say most of all, the advice would be like, when you're there, just relish it, because it's not like North America at all. And when you get back to North America, you'll have been spoiled.
Yeah.
And it's really like, it's something else to ride around cars who know you're there, who are aware of you and are looking out for you. And filtering at every red light it's just unbelievable. Like rush hour traffic doesn't exist, sitting behind cars pumping fumes at you doesn't exist.
Very cool.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, even if you can go there and rent a bike for a week, you know, and get a taste of it, it's still worth it. It's just pick your, you know, your location, your region that you want to be in and just go rip around and
have some fun.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. Have some fun.
Cool. So, fast forward 30 years, you're still on two wheels.
Still on two wheels. I'm on a 2011 Harley Street Bob.
Nice. That's a little ripper.
Stripped down.
Yeah.
Keep it single saddle. I like it to be it's a little bit of my World War II bike, a little bit of my Fonzie bike. Just it's in a matte black.
Huh?
And it's really, really, like, really stripped down. Very sort of simple, basic. And honestly, I got to do something about the pipes. It still sounds too much like a VW to me.
Really?
It needs a bit more throat. Yeah. It's stock pipes. I never did anything to the pipes, but every time I ride it, I'm like, you know, I heard your sound effect in your intro.
Right.
That bike. I was like, I want my bike.
So, yeah.
But I haven't done anything about it.
We got
too lazy.
One of our guys just bought a brand new 2024 Street Glide.
Oh, nice.
And of course, it sounds like a washing machine, I think. I was teasing him because, you know, my bike sounds pretty good. It's not, you know, it's not maybe as throaty as I'd like it, but it sounds pretty good. And he turned his bike on and I'm like, is it running? I can't hear it. Just messing with him, you know. Oh, I didn't know you had a Honda. nothing wrong with Hondas.
Yeah.
But they're quiet.
No, nothing. I guess they make them quiet as stock. And I guess
yeah. See
you
now,
do whatever you want. But
now my wife's first two bikes, she had a Sporty and then she had a Softail Deluxe, and they were both loud. I mean, they had pipes and the. Now her new bike is stock, and she actually likes it. She's like, I like the loud bikes, but you know, I'm kind of enjoying a quieter bike. So.
She's mellowed.
Maybe just a little.
Yeah.
Me, I still like the rumble, so.
I gotta get me some of that.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. My first Harley, they had stock. That had to go because it needed to rumble. And not to mention that her bike was louder than mine, and I couldn't have that, so. Now I'm louder than she is, but she's stock, so it's pretty easy.
It's funny, you know. I always thought I'll never get a Harley. Like, why would I get a Harley? It's just a bike, and I don't care, and I'm not a joiner, and I don't want to do all that. And I went to LA for business one time, and instead of renting a car, I rented a Harley. It was a Sporty with forward controls, and it had a great sound to it. And I rode it around LA for meetings for 3-4 days. And at the end of that, I was like, oh, I get it. This is not like any bike I've ever ridden. It was a whole other thing.
It is, isn't it?
And it really just feels different, rides different.
It's tough to explain to somebody. It. Yeah.
I don't even know how I can explain it.
The guy who got the 24, all right, he hadn't ridden in like 30 years, and he bought a bike when I bought mine, right after I bought mine. He's like, well, I haven't ridden, but I'd love to get back into it. So we found him a nice Victory. Nice bike, you know.
Nice.
And he rode that for a year. And then he was looking. We were looking at going on a bigger trip. And I had bought my Ultra Classic. So he's looking at an Ultra. And he found one. And we went and he ended up buying it. But he's like, I have footage of him from a Christmas party saying, giving us Harley owners a hard time. I'll never own one. And he sat on that thing and he fell in love with it. And dude, he's like, I had no idea. He says, it's just different. Riding a Harley is just different. He says, I can't. And now he bought a brand new 2024.
Yeah. So, he bought in. He gets it.
He gets it now, don't he?
It was pretty wild. It was pretty wild that feeling that feeling and just coming to understand it.
Right.
Light bulb going off. Yeah.
So, how's riding up in Canada?
It's not bad. I mean, you know, I'm in Toronto, so we've got some pretty nice stuff, you know, half hour out of the city. You get to, into some nicer stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty awful in the city. Like, it's a great way to get around the city and not, you know, the parking's good and you can park for free and all the green pea parking. So, you know, you've got some advantages riding it around in the city as a city sort of commuter kind of thing. But yeah, we go on rides and we can get into the hills and, you know, the little foothilly kind of mountainy stuff that we have around Toronto pretty quickly. And, I haven't since the Europe trip, I really haven't toured much at all. So I haven't done anything long. You know, I've definitely driven across the country a couple times,
right,
but not on a bike.
Not on a bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're gearing up right now for our annual Father's Day weekend ride called Wild Hogs.
Oh, nice.
And they usually average about 1,300 miles in 4 days. So
wow,
it's
that's a lot of riding.
It's
and where do you go? Where do you guys go?
This year we are going to, from Ludington here, we're going to St. Robert, Missouri, to the to the Uranus Fudge Factory.
Is that a store or a restroom?
It's a store. I'm hoping it's a store. So, yeah. So the first year we did it, we actually went north up into the UP to Gay, Michigan. I didn't even know there was a place called Gay, Michigan. If you Google it, like the only thing that pops up on it is the gay bar. And it's they say it's the most photographed sign. I know they say it's the most photographed sign in the UP, and it probably is.
That's funny.
It's, you know, it's this little bar up in this little town, Gay, Michigan, and so that was our first Father's Day Wild Hogs weekend trip. And then last year we went to Savannah, Illinois, to Poopy's Pub and Grub. Poopy's is a pretty well-known biker destination, biker bar. Well, we got there we got there on a Thursday night, and it was dead. I mean, I think the employees outnumbered us, and there were six of us. So, it was a quiet night at Poopy's Pub. It was kind of disappointing. We were figuring, you know, because it's a huge place. It's got tattoo parlors and burnout pits. And,
oh wow.
A pool it's a destination stage for bands. The place is huge. But Thursday night is not the night to go.
Right.
So we were a little disappointed.
You need
about
the weekend.
That.
Needs to be the weekend.
Yeah, they said Friday, Saturdays, and Sunday afternoon is rocking there. So
right.
Whatever.
Gotta go back.
We actually are going back this year on our way back from Uranus Fudge Factory. We're going to Poopy's Pub. We'll be there on Saturday night.
Wait a minute. You're going to take the fudge to the Poopy's?
Yeah, we're going to take the fudge to Poopy's. And they actually have a Motley Crue cover band there that night. So it'll be an interesting night, I'm sure.
Cool. That sounds like a great trip.
Yep. And then, of course, I started planning our 2025 trip to Sturgis for the 85th anniversary. So, and that's going to be a long ride. Right now it's like Sturgis, 3 days of riding from here.
Right. Oh, I'll be worth it when you get there.
Yeah. I mean, the ride out isn't going to be very much fun probably, but once we get there, it'll be worth it.
Yeah. You could do some episodes of this podcast from the road.
We've been talking, me and my co-host that's not here today, trying to do some more live. We have a big event in Baldwin coming up in May, the Blessing of the Bikes. And we were trying to figure out a way to do some live podcasts there Cause there's,
yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So we're working on it. I could break out the old soundboard because that's chargeable, and I don't know.
Oh, throw in the back of the bike.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It's an idea. Nice. Something to mess with.
Yeah, sounds fun. Yeah. I got to plan a trip to do something.
Yeah. You got to get it. Of course, your bike's not really.
Not a touring bike.
I mean, my first big trip on a bike was on a Softail, so not a touring bike, but they're pretty capable.
Yeah, you can manage for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've only got forward control, so sometimes I use the passenger pegs just to change it up.
Yeah.
Change it, get a little stretch in my legs. But so yeah, I know we've got Algonquin Park. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say we've got Algonquin Park just north, like about 2.5 hours north of here. It's a huge piece of land. And so one of the things we're talking about is just doing a loop around the park, which is like probably a couple of days ride.
Oh, wow.
2-3 days. Yeah.
That'd be cool.
And that's, you know, way up northern country. So it's rolling and 2 lanes. And yeah, right. Pretty beautiful up there.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That might be my trip.
There you go. Back pant, tent.
Yeah. Right. Or little motels.
Oh, yeah.
Do that too.
Yeah, we were talking on our Sturgis trip. There might be some camping involved. I don't know.
Yeah. You guys have saddlebags though, right?
Yeah.
I can't even put a pair of extra glasses on my bike.
I was going to say, your bike's stripped down. There's no room on it in the first place, but stripped down, there's really no room.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's a backpack or nothing. I maybe strap something, put on the passenger seat, strap something to that.
Yeah.
But in our group, we have one guy who's on like an old gold wing. He's got like 3 big bags. So everything goes into his bike. He's the pack mule.
He's the pack mule. Like, yeah. That's the way I was. I had to be the pack mule for my wife. And then, of course, now she's got a street glide, so she's got her own bags.
Yeah, so there you go.
I don't have to have her in my bike for her stuff.
Do you ride with anybody who's got a trailer, who does trailers?
As far as pull behind our bikes, negative.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. Nobody's got that. That's, I know a guy who he's actually related to my wife who has one of those pull behind campers. It's a little camper in a trailer.
Oh wow!
That he pulls.
Wow! Can pull behind. On a bike for a bike?
Yeah, he can pull behind his bike. Yep. Wow! It's just like a little tent, basically. It's almost like a pop up. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
And she had a line on one, and I'm like, well, I don't know. I want to say one of her cousin had one. And then I was looking at his setup, and I'm like, well, that is pretty cool. Maybe just see what he wants for it. But he wanted quite a bit of money for it. And I was like, I don't need one that bad. You know?
Yeah. Tent will work just fine.
Yep. My tent will work just fine. But
yeah. It doesn't take up as much gas.
Right. And it looks a little bit cooler on the bike than pulling a trailer.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not to that.
Yeah.
I'm not to the trike stage yet, so.
Yeah, I
still got to have a little bit of coolness.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, Jarrett, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. It was very, very interesting. And I still think
you need to write a book.
You definitely need to write a book.
All right. Just about the trip?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, maybe.
Yeah. I'm thinking you can sell some copies.
I never really thought it was, you know. Fun to talk about, but is it an interesting read?
I bet you it would be. I said I'm reading a couple right now. I not the first one that I've read. There's been a few of them that sound very similar. Pretty good stories.
Yeah, I've got them all written down. Maybe you've given me an idea.
There you go.
Maybe we'll have to see. Yeah,
I won't even ask you for any royalties or anything like that.
I'll just mention
in the foreword or something like that would be cool, but.
Yeah. Okay. You got it.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, bikers. All right.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Pleasure.
We'll have to stay in touch. Now that we're connected on social media.
Will you let me know when it's come out?
I will. I will definitely let you know when I pop it out. It might be actually be this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that fast.
Oh, wow. The timing was perfect. My headphones just died.
Oh. All right. Well.
Perfect timing.
That is good timing. All right, man.
Yeah.
I will let you go.
All right.
Next. I'm going to wrap the show up and get ready for the next one.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend.
All right, man. Yeah, thanks. You too.
Cheers.
See ya. There we go. Jarrett Sherman, all the way from up in Canada. Great guy. Just reinstates more what I say every day. Life is short, bikers. Get after it. And with that being said, it's a little cold out, but the sun is out, so you should get out there and ride. I cannot, because I have to do more work. I have 3 more podcast guests. So, get out there and ride, bikers. I'm out of here. Thanks for listening to the Mid-Michigan Biker Podcast. Have a good one, bikers. And remember, life is short, so get after it.